This episode contains explicit content. Previously on The Spoken World.
Thinking about it as a child, I was always fascinated by the sex industry.
And they will rap us on top, collect us money again on top, steal our phones and art. So when you see something like that, where will you go to? Will you want to go to police again and go and expose yourself?
So my first was spectacular and continues to be. My second was the night that I was arrested.
For like 30, 45 minutes, this guy is still on top of me. And there is no sign of him coming. I started beginning that I'm tired. He said I can never be tired.
Hi, my name is Hua, and you are listening to a podcast that unites literary artists from around the world. This is The Spoken World.
I don't see any reason why sex work should remain illegal because I think it's a valid source of income, actually. And I think because the African society is mostly hypocritical, they would not face up to it. After all, sex work has to involve, you know, the selling party and the buying party. So if men or people who actively engage sex workers don't need their services, right, we wouldn't have them in the first place.
Last week, we started a two-part series introducing Lola Davina, the author of the self-help book, Thriving in Sex Work. If you haven't listened to the part one, stop. Go back, because on this episode, we'll be continuing the story shared by real sex workers in Nigeria and the US, exploring reasons why sex work isn't for everybody on the areas of stigma, relationships, marriage, and being outed. But first, as is tradition, here's an excerpt from Lola's book. They want us to read their thoughts, blow their minds, and deliver peak experiences. But sex isn't something you're supposed to pay for. Shouldn't you get it for free by looking fine, smelling good, and all the rest? Clients internalize the message, there is something wrong with me. So, strip clubs are for losers, dungeons are for creeps, and seeing prostitutes is pathetic. Not only that, as high as clients soar, that's how far they plummet. And can you get any higher than having sex just for yourself? Clients crash back to earth naked and exposed. The sex industry reeks of the same sticky regret as carnivals and casinos. All that dislocation and self-loathing has to go somewhere. Like black holes in reverse, clients bend badness and blame away from themselves. I call it outsourcing shame. As discussed before, stigma is something sex workers battle with every day, as well as other fears, self-esteem issues, getting arrested, being violated, and lastly, the fear of being outed. How do you tell those who love you that you are a sex worker? Speaking about coming out, patience, I remember in your answers, you did speak about you not only working for yourself, but for your siblings and for your children. Has it gotten to the part where they know or your relatives know that you are a proud sex worker?
Okay, thank you for that question. It's something that I've said to myself that what I'm passing through, I wouldn't want any of my siblings to pass through. So what I do is that I don't let my son know that I'm a sex worker because he keeps asking me, "Mommy, where do you go? What do you always go to?" I let him know that I have so many places I'm working. I'm working in a joint, which he knows that I've once worked in a bar. And when you work in a bar, you can stay. There are some times that people do birthday in a bar overnight. You come back 3 a.m. close late. So I explain that to him. But my sister that is next to me, at some point, I need to sit her down and tell her about life. And let her know what I'm doing, what I do. So also let her know that I know if I don't talk to her, she might be also sleeping or having sex with boys, men for free, all in the name of boyfriend. I let her know that, man, that sex that you have with your boyfriend, you can also have it and make money out of it. Also help yourself double, because the matter of fact, I need to tell her the truth so that she will not make the mistake that I make. Because if I use condom, maybe all the time consistently, I wouldn't have got pregnant when I'm selling sex. So I let her know that she should be using condom. So I make sure that she goes out to work with condom in her bag, because me can't open my bag without condom inside. It's part of me. So I think she's the only person that knows. I can't tell my other siblings because I don't want them to grow up and have this mindset that their mother is actually sleeping around with different men to make money for them. It's a sacrifice that I accept to take for my family. So that's it.
So two things actually from the discussion or your response. One is safety, physical, emotional safety, and another one is stigma. So while I was speaking to Ejiro just before, she did mention that we have to create an environment where sex workers no longer feel stigmatized, you know, having to do their work. Patience, I'm going to ask this based on the reply that you gave. It seems like you still feel stigmatized, whether or not you are fighting to remove the criminalization of sex workers in Nigeria. It still feels like, you know, you still have that stigma of working in this profession, of being in this profession.
Yeah, we are in a society where people stigmatize people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a sex worker and you say you've not been stigmatized before, you are lying. Several times I've been stigmatized before. In fact, there was a day I wore a t-shirt that wrote, "Fight violent, not sex work." I know how many person talked about it. Even my pastor in church called me and like, "What are you trying to tell people? What information are you trying to pass?" Now, this is me. You cannot, for me, that's you've already stigmatized me. You've discriminated me that I'm wearing a t-shirt that talks about sex work. So we are in a society where they stigmatize sex worker. Even your dressing alone, people will stigmatize you. There is how you dress. What, as soon as you leave your house to buy something, next thing you will hear is that I shower.
Mm-hmm.
Those names, for me, I am used to it. I know we have other sex workers that are coming up, which if they call them like that, they feel stigmatized, they enter inside. Me, I've grown past that level where I pass on the road. You call me a shower. My dear, I will turn back and even answer you alpha.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level I've reached now. So I don't care about what people say about me. I am a sex worker. If I pass on the road, you know that I'm looking beautiful because I've used the money to achieve so many things for myself.
Lola and Amy seem to share similar reservations. Their stories, however, contained some extremities, proving again the reason for that fear.
So I did not come out to my family. I've been estranged from my family for, how long would it be now? It's over 20 years. So I don't speak to my birth family at all. And some of it, I would say that maybe 10% of that is the sex work piece of it. But the vast majority is just that I don't have anything to do with those people for other reasons. So my family, my chosen family. Those are the people that I've picked up along the way and I love very deeply. And I love them as if they were my family. So I have not come out. And when you're asking the broader question about coming out, the vast majority of people in my inner sanctum, in the people that are really part of my core group, again, I either met them through sex work directly or when I was doing sex work. So there was no way to really like not have them know. Since I've been retired, it can be a little bit more awkward. I sometimes I don't come right out and tell people that I've first met what I do. But if people are get to know them better and are agreeable, then I let them know. And if not, then I just keep them kind of at arm's length as an acquaintance.
I did not come out to my family. That was done for me. So unfortunately in this business, because you are talking often about a lot of money, it is profitable. And you're talking about often young people who are a little bit, maybe sometimes naive or just young. You do have predators. You get smarter about avoiding them, of course, but in the beginning they come for who's new, and that happened to me. So there was a man named David Elms who owned a site called TheEroticReview.com, and you can Google these news articles. He wanted to control my career via these reviews, that I would ask my clients to write reviews. He would charge for access to read those by other clients who wanted to read about me. And so he would be sort of a virtual pimp, if you will. I am a little feisty, and of course I told him what he could do with that idea. And he got madder and madder over the years. And eventually he bought the URL to my legal birth name, made a copy of my Amy Taylor website, but the text was outing me, my home address, calling me a drug user, which I am not. No shade to drug users, but I don't. All kinds of lies. My favorite one was he said I slept with animals, which is pretty creative. And he talked about my family, my parents, my sister. And then he sent paper copies of it to them and to the man that I was dating at the time. I lost my job. I lost that man. And I miscarried my unborn child. And so I couldn't get this website taken down. I didn't know who had done it to me. And so in America, to reveal the privately held ownership of a website, you have to have a police report and or a lawsuit. So I did both. I was very scared of the cops, but I decided whatever they could do to me would be tolerable if I had to get rid of this. I had no choice. So my lawyers teamed up. I was consumed by getting justice, and we prosecuted and sued. And of course I won. They took it down. I won a judgment I've never collected. It was never about money. And when I won, I moved out of town. I was so scared. Took a job in another state and was living there for about a year and a half. My family didn't speak to me. They do now. They love me. They do not approve of what I do. I don't approve of their judgment, but we love each other. That's family. But while I was living out of the state, dealing with lawyers and lawsuits, this pimp decided to drive to that state to kill me. And he, for that, was intercepted by the police, and they put him in jail for 5 years. And all of that's on Google. You can read about it. It was a nightmare. And and to my point earlier, all of this is a result of stigma and criminalization. If a person had been trying to abuse me as a worker and I had rights legally, I would have been able to handle it much sooner and without all of this. Because our industry is marginalized, you end up with predators like this in it. So that's how I got outed.
As a sex worker whose job is to stimulate the minds and souls of their clients, I was curious if there was any room for personal relationships and perhaps romance.
It's kind of like a really tricky state to be in, working as a sex worker and being in a relationship. You definitely have to find someone who is, you know, understanding. So I have to ask, how do you have romantic relationships and then mesh this with sex work?
It was not easy for us. I was getting ready to retire because we had conceived a child. Obviously, that was not totally on purpose. It was going to be a game changer, but we were in love. I had made and socked away some money. And the plan was that he was taking a job in another state, which he did end up taking. We still keep in touch and I wish him well. But this was all too much for him. And I understand that it's not his fault. But it was hard to continue to work. But as soon as I met him and started falling in love, I was starting to wind down my career at the time. What happened to me with that pimp, and because I had to sue and deal with that, I obviously then lost the relationship, lost the child, and had a need for a lot of money because the lawsuit cost me several hundred thousand dollars. So I just came back to the business. I wasn't ready to try to date again after everything that happened. But when I was in love with him, the idea was to wind it down and try to give that relationship a shot. But that wasn't what fate had in mind. And in some ways, that's difficult. But in other ways, it's fine. I'm my choices also provide, like I said, a lot of positive things. I'm going to the Maldives tomorrow. So hey, there's that.
Have there ever been clients that you were emotionally attached to?
Yes, absolutely. That does happen, and it has. And I'm still friends with a few of them. One in particular I'm thinking of right now moved to Europe. It's not convenient for him to fly me there all the time, but we still stay in touch, and he is just a divine friend, and I miss him. I think fondly of him. I'm so lucky that I knew him for years. And there's a handful of that. It's not the majority, but anytime you meet people, sometimes there's just a sparkle there. I don't know why, but it does happen, and I'm just glad when it does.
Ichiro and Patience, however, had a different way of handling romance in the workplace. All of this was attributed mainly to the special boyfriend story.
The only client that I was almost attached to was the doctor that I said he used to talk to me, because there are some times that he's talking to me now, make it look as if we're falling in love. When he's talking to me, there are things he will tell me. What if I do this to you, do this for you, and do this for you? Will you leave this? And I will tell him, you are talking about doing this for me. What about my siblings? If you do for me, if I don't do for my siblings, who will do for them? So he will say, okay, you know, you have to reduce partner, all those blah, blah, blah. It was almost coming attached to me. And he was also using that avenue now, not to be paying for sex. So when I noticed that he will use that time now, he thought that he want to be, we are now as if we want to fall in love. I want to have a trusted partner, somebody that I love. He was now using that time now to be collecting, to be having sex with me anytime he feels, without anything. So I have to stop it, because he was even taking much of my time. Sometimes he will come and pick me and go to your hotel. We'll stay there all day. You're having sex with me. You're not giving me money. And this is time that I'm supposed to use and make my money. And you'll be doing love and return me back later in the day. And my colleague in the brothel, seeing me coming out of the car, they feel that I don't hammer. They don't know, say now, show free. All in the name of love, I go do. So I have to stop it.
In 2010-11, mm-hmm. He actually came as a client. He paid and took me for daybreak, that's overnight. And he came the first time, he paid, came the second time. No, when he's coming, he will do buy things, call you on phone, what do you want me to buy for you? I'm coming to spend the night, blah, 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 this, that. So that's how I actually started, and gradually I came attached to him. So it got to a stage, and even he had to introduce me to some of his family members.
That's
that.
Serious.
So, but it got to a point that he now started feeling like he owns me.
Mm.
So he wants a situation whereby whatever he says he wants, he gets. So if he says he wants to stay in my room during the day, if he's not working, he will just be there, and no, when clients comes to look for me, there is nowhere to take them in. And it's so, so annoying and frustrating, because the money is not coming from him the way it used to. So I called him one day. I said, bros, see this Lego they bring for me? No fit work. Like, it's as you see me, so I don't come Lagos, come Cambridge. And money I can't count for Lagos. You see, this is your love, eh? You will carry and pack somewhere. And before them, you know, we've gotten lecture from all this head talk, when they teach us about special boyfriend and all that. So I started using that to also help me also. Because I later found that they also have another girl in another brothel as well that he also calls his girlfriend. So if he's not with me, he's with that one. To an extent that his family member also knew that same girl.
Wow. Okay, so I'm actually really curious. What is the special boyfriend story?
It's, these are boyfriends. They know you are a sex worker. They come to the brothel, you know, try to win you over. And at the end of the day, they started dating you. Before you know what is happening, they will bring their, maybe when they are coming, they will come with one of that clothes. And in the morning when they are going, they will take their bath and go and leave the other one there. So gradually they started having property in your house. That is how they also have it in other girls as well. They will come, maybe he's coming, they will call you, I'm coming, you cook for him and all that. There was one issue I just settled, that was last month. This particular guy actually drove us, we traveled to Delta State, he took us there, and he was with us there about a weekend. So when we returned, the girl he is dating knew I was the one he took to Delta State. So the girl called me 2 days after the return and started saying that, because it's from my side, it's an Orobo, that your brother has started, he's beating me, he's doing this one. So I called the guy and I was asking him, do you know the response he gives to me? That he returned from travel and the girl is asking him to bring money to cook. That there's no money to cook and there's no food. That the girl must be sleeping with men when he was not around. So where is the money? So those are the things special boyfriend does. They want you to sleep with other men and use that money to take care of them. So we have a lot. We have a lot of them in Nigeria. When you go to brothels, you see them.
So I was going to ask, with everything you've said about romance and how you say people are going to have to pay for romance and you don't want any because of the special boyfriend or other things that could come in play. This is just a quick question. Do you look forward to settling down maybe and having and starting a family?
Okay, yeah. I'm actually looking forward to that, but it has to be somebody that I know it can take care of my needs and can also accept my children as his own. Not somebody that will come and wants me to be taking care of that person. It doesn't happen, no. Because my children's responsibility alone, now I carry for head. So I will not come and carry somebody else's child responsibility and add my own to it. So I'm looking for somebody I can add my own responsibility to, and I know he really loves me dear. He loves me for who I am. I'm not going to hide my personality to that person. Know my kind of person, and you accept me that yes, I'm ready to spend the rest of my life with you. If it comes, fine.
I want to marry you. I want to be somebody. I want to feel the feelings of being a wife. I want to belong. But it should be somebody that that will not come and judge me based on my past life or the way I look. Because this dressing sexy is still part of me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I've had somebody like that I was thinking that it's going to work out. But man, it's the same thing. We still did the same thing.
And yes, I know what you're thinking. And I asked the question, if they were so passionate about relationships and marriage, what were their reservations with dealing with a married client?
I wanted to know how you work with clients that are married. Do you ask, or are those questions better left not asked?
Don't ask, don't tell. The vast majority of clients I saw were married men. There's no question. And then the second, probably that I would say that was probably over half of my clientele. And then the next biggest cohort would be unmarried men. There were times when it didn't bother me at all. It didn't never cross my mind. I didn't care. There were times when it bothered me a lot. I didn't like the hypocrisy. I didn't like the lying. I didn't like the entitlement. you know, the stereotype, and I think this was vastly mostly true, is married men who were having sex without their wives' knowledge. And that just that male entitlement, just that idea that they should have all the sexual variety and excitement and thrill that they wanted, but still have the full privilege and protection of being an upstanding member of society, married and, you know, with a family or whatever, to have all of the privilege that goes along with that, with none of the blowback and none of the stigma and none of the garbage that goes along with being sexual outside of their relationship. And there were times when that hypocrisy and discrepancy was very, very difficult for me to deal with. And even just the fact that the sex industry itself is so vastly skewed towards the male appetite, which is another issue that I have with it, I would be a lot more forgiving and a lot more, I don't know, I would have a lot more positive attitudes towards the sex industry if it catered more towards women and trans people and non-binary people, if it wasn't just so overwhelmingly, unrelentingly male dominated towards the male gaze and the male interest, and the idea that I don't know that women could go out and purchase the services that they wanted and have the adventures that they wanted, I would like the industry a whole lot more if it was more fair and more equitable and not just a playground for male desire, not so heavily a playground for male desire.
I had a previous conversation with another sex worker who concluded that most of her clients were married men. In terms of, I know that this could be a stretch, but does that ever affect you going into that, you know, line of work? Do you have like a restriction like, no, we don't work with married men, or there's nothing like that? Or do you expect the same divide in the sense that most of your clients are married as well?
Very well. So in that aspect, majority of my own clients, majority of them are married men, and they even pay more better.
Thank you, my sister.
They pay very well. So you don't need to laugh about it. You know, majority of them, sometimes they might just come and say they want to spend like 1 hour, they want to rest in your room for like 2 hours, they need to cool their head. Sometimes they might want to even be telling you what is happening in their house. But sometimes I just say, guy, my rest is born, rest me, you pack where. It's in the happen for your house. I start giving my money because I have this mentality. You give me my money before anything starts. If you want to spend like 1 hour in my room, we have to agree on the price. And at the end of the day, I get my money before you start resting.
So I don't know if I cannot do it, like she has said, madam. Yes, so married men pay better. They give you peace.
Mm-hmm.
You can control those ones when they come, okay? If you want to stay 1 hour, you know, say, now, yeah, they take big money. You go pay double low. They will pay because they want to come and have peace. Who knows what they are passing through in their home? They feel that we sex workers give them peace. And that's what we are known for. We are peacemakers. When they come, we give them the peace and collect the money. And their style, yes, that darling, they get. There's this love, this sweetness they get from us, which they think that they can't get it in their home. So at that point, I wait till we go do now, go keep quiet now, allow them stay since they're paying.
Mm-hmm.
All those Koromoto boys, area boys that will come, the way they will handle you, they know they quick come, they know they fast come, then go come out, they're living hell out of your life for chicken money. Married man, where you go, don't touch one or two places, but it is sweeter. You don't sleep, wake up, count better money, like saying a daybreak, he carry you. Pay you, go back. Madam, now married men, no. Now you shopper. But may God forgive our sins.
We've learned that sex work entails discipline of physical, mental, and emotional state all at once. How did they make sure they didn't burn out?
A lot of sex workers end up sort of more isolated, both by force and sometimes by choice, because it's exhausting to try to be who you are and continuously get judged, shamed, rejected, arrested, hurt. So because I'm sort of insulted more often than people who receive society's respect, And also because much of sex work can be physically demanding. Overnights with clients render my skincare routine tougher. Strippers get bruises and soreness. Sometimes critique by clients and competitors can cause body image issues or exacerbate those you might already have. There's a lot in our work. And so self-care is just totally vital. And I do a lot of it. I get a lot of sleep. I eat really healthy. I spend a lot of time with those I love and my dog.
It wasn't easy. Oh, I will say it's not easy because for me till now, I still have a problem with sleeping. If I don't take drugs, I can't sleep. I don't sleep on my own. If I take drugs now, it can make me sleep. It can take me for a whole week. I'll be sleeping well, but as soon as the drugs maybe expire from my system, I don't sleep because there was no time for me to sleep. In a brothel where I was at that time, it's where daytime we don't have customer that much, client that much. So the ones that are coming, you need to stay and see when they are coming in so you can call. You can also call because people were collecting people's customer. So now in the night is where the whole thing boom, because the brothel that I was, there was a bar inside. So in the evening, people comes there to drink. So we have a whole lot of customer, but at daytime, we don't have enough and you need to make money. My daytime money that I was making was to use and pay for the brothel. The one that I make in the night was to use and take care of myself for my needs and my family needs. So it wasn't easy. There are some times that I would break down. There was no time for me, like having time for myself, taking care of myself. And sometimes my head will look as if you want to go crazy. There was a time I needed a psychologist to talk to me. I needed someone to talk as if I was going mad. And I got one then. That was a client too. So he helped me. He's a doctor. He works in psychiatric as at that time. I don't know if he's still working then. He helped me at that time to talk to me, talk things that I needed to hear. So at that time, it was somebody that helped me out.
So the Spoken Word podcast, basically, even though we do talk about the story behind the story and we interact with the authors, it's also basically about how people can be inspired to write their own masterpiece. So I'm going to ask, what made you decide to write this book, Lola?
Yeah, this is one of the things I really love about your podcast, and I find so inspiring myself. And well, to write the first book, actually, ironically enough, I wanted to write a personal finance book for sex workers because I had gone through such financial trauma myself and found myself back in sex work because of the need to make money. And I wanted to kind of write about that. That was my initial impulse. And I was kind of tossing around a book proposal and stuff like that. And I was talking about it with several of my really close girlfriends and, you know, book, sex workers, all of them. And one of them said to me, you know, Lola, that sounds great. You know, this is a really good, useful title. This is a really good idea. But you know what? Make sure that you include a chapter on self-care because, you know, that there just isn't enough stuff about that. She used to do workshops and stuff. And she said, you know, I always used to devote some portion of my workshops to the notion of self-care. So if you're going to write a book about sex work and money, you got to definitely make sure that you include that chapter. And I have to say, I walked away from that conversation like a nuclear bomb had gone off in my brain. And I had like what I can really only describe as sort of like a manic experience where over the next 3 days I wrote out the outline for my first book. It just came to me fully formed. I'm going to say that I probably I had the. If you look at the table of contents of my first book, I would say that I did not even alter it by even 10%. That outline appeared to me like popped out of my brain fully formed.
Thanks so much for that. We have come to the end of the show. So we have a mix of listeners from different parts of the world, people who love literary arts and are looking to dig deep into the story behind the story. So using that sort of perspective into speaking now, do you have any final words for our listeners, what you want them to leave with?
Tell your story. That's it.
Thank you so much for listening till the end, guys. From part one to part two, this was an amazing journey. Special thanks to Lola Davina, the author of the self-help book, Thriving in Sex Work. The women from NSWA, Patience and Ajuru, for delivering such authentic stories. And Amy Taylor, for reaching out and making this happen. I would like to give a shout out to the music for this episode and the episodes before this. Boys Know They Smile is by Mema Music, and the transition music is by Dominique. The music used for the book reading, sometimes in and out of the conversation, is by Wayne Jones. So yes, once again, I'm asking that you rate, review, share, and please donate and help us create more awesome content. My name is Hua from Nigeria.